Welcome back to Office 365 Performance Management course. And this is module 10. And in module 10, we're going to be talking about 12 of the most common tests that you can do for performance issues that impact users. I'm Paul Andrew. I'm an Office 365 Technical Product Manager, and I focus on data center and network performance. And I'm joined today by Paul Collinge. Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi. My name's Paul Collinge. I'm a senior premier field engineer based in the UK, and I do a lot of work around Office 365 networking, performance, and connectivity for customers.
Great. We are looking forward to hearing from some of your experience, Paul. All right, so this is Module 10, and in Module 10, we are going to be walking through these issues that customers have. In Module 9, you know, we spent a bunch of time talking about how you gather information from the customer about what kind of issues that they have. And we also looked at some of the testing tools. So in this module, we're going to dive right in and go through these tests one at a time and show you what they're about and how to do them.
Yeah, these are my top 10 really that I find on customers. I mean, I've done this work on numerous customers around EMEA, and the same things come up all the time. So hopefully, if we walk through these, we'll help you find and diagnose and fix these issues.
Awesome. Great. All right. Let's get right into it. The first of our tests is just about latency and round trip time. So it sounds pretty straightforward. Let's talk about latency a little bit.
Yeah, so this is one of the first tests I do, just so I can get a view of how the network is performing. Because if we're getting performance issues, then the issue may well be down to the fact that it's taking too long to get that data from Office 365. So we run a set of tests to find out what the problem is. So to do this, we use a Microsoft SysInternals tool called PSPing. And this tool works by creating a TCP session to an IP address that I give it, or a name, and a port. So this will work around the firewall issues with other ports being open. We know port 443 is open for Outlook, which is the SSL connection. So we can test that. As we mentioned in the previous module, though, we need to know very clearly what the network and equipment in the way of Office 365 is to understand the context of what we're seeing. So, for example, if there is a proxy in the middle, then we need to be sure that we need to understand that that is there, because if we run this PSPing test, we're going to go out to the proxy, and the proxy is going to respond to the request that it gives us. So that's only going to measure the round trip time to the proxy, not Office 365. So then we need to do some more work about tracing from that proxy and the egress point, that being the exit point to the customer's network, out to Office 365. So let's presume in this example here we have a proxy, because I'd say 8 out of 10 customers I go on site with do use proxies. What we would do is use the tool, give it the IP address of the proxy and port 80443, it doesn't really matter, and run the tool to find the round trip time. So that gives me the round trip time from wherever the client test is run to the edge. So it's worthwhile running this at various sites around, if there are various sites, to get an idea about the latency to get to the edge of your managed network, and then we can look out to Office 365. So to do this, we'll use the PSPing tool, which I'll just switch to now.
All right, so we'll take a look at that. And Paul, while that's setting up, if I knew that ICMP was open, which is the protocol that Ping uses, could I just use Ping for doing this test?
You could, but the results may vary. So
why is that?
Well, the reason PSPing works great, because we can give it the TCP port to use. Mm-hmm. And what it does is create a three-way handshake, a TCP three-way handshake. So we do a SYN, SYNAC, and it measures the round trip time of that. And because we give it the port that Office 365 will use, port 443, we know that should be open all the way through, so we're not going to get any blocking issues.
And I think also, because sometimes there's custom routing for Office 365 or maybe other services, it's possible that ICMP packets actually take a different route.
Correct. You're very right, yes. That's a good point. I was at a customer the other week, and they had routing based on the TCP port. So TCP port 80 and 443 traffic was sent a certain route. ICMP isn't using that port, so it was sent a different route. So we're not getting real results for the Office 365 traffic. So there's things like that that it works around. It's a good point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you told me about that. All right, so let's take a look at it. Let's run the tool and see if we can get some results.
Okay. I mean, in this circumstance here, we don't have a proxy available, but I'll just show you the syntax of how to use the tool, and then we can understand it in context of what we're looking at. So so I probably need to open PSPing first, don't I? So all we need to do is open a command prompt in that context. And then we'll do PSPing number 5. So I'll use 5 TCP connections to Office 365. And I'll do now in an instance where there's a proxy, I would use the IP address of the proxy here or the name. But because we haven't got one, we'll just use Office 365 too.
And you'd connect to the proxy first, and you'd measure to that, and then you'd measure also to Office 365 and get that?
Yeah, I'll talk about that in a second. So this is the first stage I would do in this instance. And I would also do this even if there wasn't a proxy. I would find out the IP address of a device in the customer's egress point. So the point where we leave their network, be it a firewall, a NAT device, or something I can connect to or through, to get an idea how long it takes to get to the edge of my managed network to see if the problem's there.
Yep.
So we could just, you know, be doing this to a firewall or anything, but in most customers it's a proxy. So if we run that, that'll run 5 connections out to Office 365 here, and we're getting an average return time here of 24.08 milliseconds, which is pretty good. So now I know when I open a connection to Office 365, 24 milliseconds it will take to get to the edge of my network, and now I need to work out how long it takes to get from the edge of my network to our data center and back.
Right.
So how would I do that? There's multiple ways we could do that. If you have a Microsoft device in that egress point, the DMZ, we could run the PSPing tool there where it's not in the other side of the proxy, and that would allow us to see the PSPing from there to the Office 365 servers. Sometimes that isn't feasible, so we would perhaps ask a customer's network team to take a trace on the egress point, so the external side of your proxy, and measure the return time on the SYN packet in a network monitor or something like that. If that's not feasible, let's say you don't have a network team available or you have to pay for somebody to come in to do that, then we can feasibly do it on the client. So we'll have a look how to do that now. We would do it with a network trace. So
I think we have an example of that on our slide. You have an example of that on a
I have a predefined trace, yes, where we've used a proxy. Yeah, this one here. So here's my SYN and SYNAC. It's already filtered this trace. So this is a perfect example where we have a proxy and then we have a connection from the proxy out. So this is taken on the client machine. So here is the SYN and the SYNAC, the first two packets.
Which exactly? The top one is the SYN?
This one is the SYN and the SYNAC. You can see it with the flags over here, the S and A, and this one has an S down there. So in NetMon, I can add a time delta field by just right-clicking and choose columns and add time delta. And what that shows me there is it took 3.2 milliseconds to get to the proxy, because I know that proxy is responding to that packet. And I could just back this up by running a PSPing test to the proxy, and the time should be pretty much identical to what you're seeing in NetMon here.
And the proxy's going to respond to the SYN packet because it is proxying all internet connectivity.
Correct. So it's responding to me to say, yes, you can have that connection. I'm not aware of a proxy being there, to be honest. It's agnostic to the client. So that's why we need to understand that the proxy is there. So other traffic, though, like the SSL session setup, is going to go out to the Office 365 server because the proxy can't formulate a response to that. It has to come from Office 365. So now we know how long it takes to get to the proxy. We can actually then, if we look at this packet here and then zoom in. So this is a connect and a response to this is the SSL session setup. And then if we look at the time delta there, that's gone up a lot. So that's now 400 milliseconds. So that is the time it's taken to send an SSL packet out to Office 365 and then back in to me. So what I can do now, because I know part of that time was taken to get to the edge of my network, which was 3 milliseconds, I can subtract that from that time and it'll give me just short of 400 milliseconds external round trip time. So that's a way of doing it if we don't have traces on the external edge.
Right.
If we did have a trace on the external edge, we could just look at the time delta between the SYN and the SYNAC on that trace to give us an idea.
All right, so we have a little diagram bringing this together. And in our diagram, I think we've got slightly different numbers. We've got 54.88 milliseconds as the first one.
I plucked these figures from the air. But so, yes, once you've got that information, you can then put it all together to get a good view of what your round trip time is along the route. So from here, you can see it took me 54.88 milliseconds to get to the proxy, which is not bad. It's not brilliant, but it's not too bad. And then it took 346 milliseconds to get from the proxy out to Office 365 and back. So we've got to look at this in context. If that proxy was, for example, in the USA and my data center is in the USA, that's far too long a time. That shouldn't take that long to come back. So I want to look at my ISP, for example, and find out why we're taking 350 milliseconds to get to somewhere that shouldn't take anywhere near that. But if that proxy was, for example, in Australia, and then we're connecting to a data center in EMEA, 346 milliseconds is to be expected. So we've got to look at that in context. And it's worthwhile running these tests, even if you don't have performance issues, as a baseline. So you can say, you know, if you have a performance issue a year down the line, you can refer back to that data and say, well, a year ago, it took me 40 milliseconds to get to my proxy. And it's now taking me 400. So something's gone wrong on my network. So that's a great way of isolating where the problem is and how to troubleshoot it. That we can say the problem is in my network, or it's my ISP, or it's something I need to speak to Microsoft about.
All right. So there's actually quite a lot that you can learn from round trip time. So it's very interesting. All right. So test two. Test two is about TCP window scaling. And we're going to start off this one with a little animation. And I know a little bit about this. TCP packets can, I don't know very much about it. TCP packets have to be acknowledged, but sure. You don't have to acknowledge them immediately. You can wait a little bit, but the ACKs have to come back at some point, don't they?
Exactly. Yes, there's various algorithms and different operating systems will do it differently. I mean, Windows, for example, will acknowledge every other packet by default, or those operating systems may do it differently. But essentially, what you're seeing there on the diagram is that from Japan, we're sending data to Office 365, and Office 365 is having to acknowledge that data has arrived. And that's how TCP is a reliable protocol. We know we can guarantee the transfer of data.
If there's no acknowledgements,
how do we know it got there? So UDP, for example, though, will just send that without the acknowledgements. We don't care. So that's what we use for video streaming and things where we can safely lose packets because we don't have to wait for that acknowledgement. So that's what TCP does to ensure data delivery. So the ACKs are just saying, I've got that bit of data that you sent me. Now, TCP window, that is a value essentially to say, if my client there in Japan on that that diagram was receiving data from Office 365, so we were downloading a file, a PDF from SharePoint, for example, it would send data and I have to confirm I've received that. So the TCP window is set to 65K when the TCP was designed due to the amount of bits available. So it's got a 65K buffer to receive data. So Office 365 will send that data and it can only send 65K of data until I've acknowledged at least some of that. So otherwise it knows my buffer is full and I've got data on the wire on the way to me, so it has to stop. And that can cause real performance issues in modern networks.
So we're going to send down that 65535 bytes and then we're going to stop and we're going to wait for ACKs.
Yes, essentially, yes. And that ACK might be only a couple of, a few thousand bits or something that we can only then send another packet and wait for another ACK. So you can imagine on a large latency network that we have to keep pausing and waiting for these acknowledgements to come back.
And it's not just large latency, is it? We're talking about a large, long latency and a large amount of bandwidth. So my 64K goes through in an infinitesimally small time, and then I'm stuck waiting for that ACK to come back with that long latency.
Correct, yeah. So in essence, that 64K, when it was designed, was fine. We didn't have the networks and the data that we have today. Modern networks, 64K is not enough. So what we have is something in the TCP stack called TCP window scaling, which is essentially a multiplier of that 65K. We can't increase the 65K volume because of just where the bits are in the TCP IP.
And I know RFC. When we say it's 65K, we're talking hard drive manufacturer sizes because they always use the number.
Yeah.
When we're talking 64K, that's the multiple of 1024.
Yes, exactly.
We're using those two sort of interchangeably here, but it's written one way on the slide, but that's not the way I hear it in my head.
Okay, yes. There's just a set amount of bits that we allow for a buffer.
Right.
So the TCP window scaling is a mechanism to multiply that value because we can't make it any bigger. So we use the value, let's say Windows uses the value of 8 by default from Vista onwards. We do this by default. So we work that out as 2 to the power of 8. 8 is my window scaling volume, window scaling size. And then we multiply that by the 65K, whatever the buffer is.
Yep.
So it gives us a bigger buffer.
Right. So with a bigger buffer, we can have lots of outstanding data that's been sent while we wait for it to come back.
So the slide we're on before with the demonstration shows that without TCP window scaling on, we're limited to a 65K buffer.
Yep.
With window scaling on, we are available for us. We have a 1 gig buffer maximum. We generally don't see that size, but it gives us a much bigger volume of buffer for the server to just send data to us without having to wait for the acknowledgement.
Right. So here is, we've got a trace on the slide here. There's a trace from Netmon. You explained this to me a little while ago. Why don't you tell us what we're looking at here?
Okay. So this slide is taken from a network trace. We'll actually have a look at one in a second to see where it is in the trace. But this is taken on a proxy server in Australia. And this is a customer where I saw window scaling was disabled. So Windows sets this on by default. Office 365 has this on by default. If I see a packet with window scaling disabled, then that tells me there's something in the way that's turned this off. The reason it may have turned it off is we used to have issues with this because maybe network equipment didn't understand what the scale factor was. So we'd turn it off in proxies and other network devices. Nowadays, if something doesn't understand that, we should be throwing it away.
Throwing the data away?
Well, that's what you're doing anyway, but yes.
We're throwing the equipment away.
If,
okay.
If it doesn't support window scaling, it's not long for this world.
All right.
This scaling factor is set in the three-way handshake. So this is another reason we need to start Netmon or Wireshark before we open the connection to the server. So start Outlook or open SharePoint. And we agree the scale factor in that three-way handshake, and it's set for the lifetime of the TCP session. So in this instance here on the slide, you can see that we've got a negotiating scale factor of 0x0, which means we've got a 65K buffer, which isn't good. So I'm just going to switch to a demo now just to show you this working and not working, how to spot it. It's very easy. So this is a perfectly working trace that I've taken, and I've filtered it nicely for you. In this instance, I use Firefox to open the open SharePoint, and then it split the connection out for me. And here's my SYN, which is signified by the S and the SYNAC. So those are the two packets I'm interested in. And then if we scroll along, and here it shows me very clearly, my SYN is sent out with a scale factor of 8, which is what I'd expect from Windows.
Right.
And coming back from Office 365, we've got a scale factor of 2, which is to be expected from Office 365 due to the networking infrastructure we have.
Yep.
So that means we've got window scaling on, And for Office 365 to send me data, it's got 2^8 times a maximum of 65K. You'll notice it's 8K here, but this value can change throughout the trace.
Oh, that's the number of bytes? In the
it is. That's the buffer. Yep. But we've still got that multiplying factor of that buffer,
right.
A 2^8. So if we look at a packet date later down, you'll see much bigger buffer here.
Yeah.
That's much bigger than 64K.
Yeah.
So that's a working one. So that's all we need to do.
And that buffer, although it says 131328 there, that will actually expand over time as the link
is. It will, yes.
Right.
Yeah, then we have various algorithms to increase that over time.
Right.
And
what would you see here if the scale factor was failing?
So, yes. So you expect that to come back with a value of greater than one, essentially. If it doesn't, then this is a trace taken on a client. So let's switch to one where it didn't work. This looks slightly different because of the equipment we were using to take this, but here we can see we've got a scale factor of 3 and a window of 12K there. So we've got 2^3 times that 12K to start with, and obviously that could go up to 65K. Here's the SYNAC coming back from Office 365, and you can see clearly there it's got 0x0. So we don't have any window scaling, which means that we've got a maximum buffer size of 65K
right.
For data to come from that. That says to me, because we know Office 365 will set that at a value greater than 1, because I'm seeing that on a client with 0, it means something in the middle, which is likely to be your proxy or your firewall on that egress point, has disabled this setting. So if you see this on a client, it's a good idea to then speak to your networking team or whoever manages the proxy and make sure that this is turned on and enabled. To be sure that this is the problem on the proxy, you'd want to take a trace on the outside edge of your network just to be double sure. But the fact is, if this packet's coming into you with it set to 0, the fact is it's probably going out to Office 365 set to 0. So if the client sent this one at 0x3, the proxy's going to turn it to 0 on its way out to Office 365. So we're disabling window scaling.
Right. Okay, so if window scaling is disabled or enabled, this has pretty significant impact on the effective bandwidth that you can get through. With it disabled, you're sending that small amount of data and then you're waiting for that ACK to come back. And so we have a little table here with some of the round trip times. 300 millisecond is kind of a typical round trip time from Europe to Australia.
Yep.
And so it looks like the maximum throughput you can get there, 1.71 megabits per second.
Correct. I mean, you can do the mathematics on this yourself, or there are various websites on the internet if you want to work this out. They'll do it for you. Just search for TCP window scaling calculator and you'll find them. But in essence, this is presuming here we've got 1,000 megabits per second link. With a 300 millisecond round trip time, as you say, is equivalent of Australia to EMEA. The maximum throughput you can get on that 1,000 megabits per second you're paying all your money for is 1.71 megabits per second. Once we turn on window scaling, the theoretical maximum throughput we'll get is 447 megabits per second. And you can imagine the performance impact on downloading a large file from Office 365 over that link will have.
Yeah.
And if you have a look at the table, there's a lower impact, but still a big impact even when you've got low latency links. So let's say you're in the USA and your data center's in the USA. If you've disabled this, you probably, I guess with that distance, you may be looking at 50 millisecond round trip time, maybe 100. You're still only getting 5 megabits per second, even if your data center's in the same zone as you.
Yeah.
So you can imagine the impact of this. So if we look at the next slide, this is a real-world example from that customer in Australia connecting to EMEA. So before we fixed the TCP window scaling on the egress point of their network, it took 507 seconds to download a 14 meg PDF, which you can imagine makes the service pretty much unusable.
It's really a long time.
It is, and I wouldn't wait that long for a PDF to download. I'd just give up. So once we'd turned that on the proxy, it had been disabled due to some prior networking problem that it had with other networking equipment that didn't understand scaling and then forgotten about. So we turned that back on, fixed it, and that same file then took 21 seconds to come down. And that's an enormous improvement in the performance. And not only will this help Office 365 traffic, it also will help their internet browsing, because everything going through the proxy will have the same problem.
Yep.
So this can make a big difference to your performance. It's an easy thing to check with a quick network trace on a client. And if you see that 0x0, either get in touch with us and we'll help you find it, or generally your network team will be able to pin down what device it was that set that to zero.
All right. So the next topic that we want to talk about is, and this is our test number three, which is GeoDNS issues. So this is the number three on the list.
Yep.
Let's take a look.
And this is a pretty common scenario I run into. Again, I ran into this with a customer just last week.
GeoDNS, what does GeoDNS mean?
It basically, we do some pretty clever stuff with your connectivity. So we know customers have sites around the world, and we sit tenants in a single location for most customers. So we do some pretty clever stuff around Outlook and Link to get you to our network pretty quickly. So we have a very high-speed backbone network connecting our data centers. We want you on that network as quickly as possible. So let's say in the example of the slide there, we've got a customer with three sites, one in Australia, one in EMEA, and one in the US. Let's imagine their data center is located in the US. With GeoDNS, in theory, what should happen is we'll do a DNS call in Australia. So I'm sat in Australia.
Yep.
And it will say, hey, you're in Australia, therefore your nearest data center is Singapore. And we'll connect you to that, a CAS server in that for exchange, and then we'll pull your data for your mailbox over our high-speed network from there, which means you'll get a much better performance, a much better experience. So if you switch back to the slide and imagine that we've maybe got a problem here, that green route is showing the Microsoft network, and if we click on one, let's imagine for a second that this customer's egress point, so they exit the network, their DNS servers are all based in EMEA.
Yep.
That means that when my client in Australia says, hey, where's Office 365? That call is being done in EMEA. We'll look at that call and say, okay, it looks like you're in EMEA. Your nearest data center is one of ours in EMEA. And what will happen is the client will then have to connect to that data center.
They'll get told to connect to the CAS server.
The CAS server in EMEA.
Even though they're in Australia.
Yeah, exactly. And you can imagine that takes about 300 milliseconds to get to EMEA. And then from EMEA, we have to pull your data from your data center in North America and then send it via EMEA back down to you in Australia, which isn't very efficient. What we want is for that DNS call to go out locally in Australia, and we'll find that data center in Singapore, we'll connect to that nearest data center for you, and then everything should work smoothly from there. But this is a common thing because a lot of customers do route traffic to a central point and manage it there, which normally is fine. You're looking for Microsoft.com, you'll do a DNS call, it doesn't matter, we'll get the IP address of Microsoft.com, it makes no difference. But in this instance, it makes a big difference. So we've got another slide just showing that how that works. Currently, we only do this for Link, for front-end server connectivity and Exchange. But this is exactly the scenario I had from a customer last week, saying we've got performance issues in our Kuala Lumpur office for Exchange and Link. And when we did the test, which I'll show you in a second, we found they were connecting to an EMEA data center, not the local one in Singapore. So what we did was just switch their DNS routing so it goes out in Kuala Lumpur, fixed the problem, and instantly the problem's gone away. They've got much better performance on Link and Exchange Outlook. So if we switch to a demo, I'll show you how this works. It's a pretty easy thing for you to test as a customer. You can switch around to different sites in the world or ask people to run this test for you, but it can be done in seconds. So what I'm going to do is switch to my machine, and we have a VPN client here that allows me to punch out to the internet in various locations around the world, so we don't have to go traveling to do these tests.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So at the minute, I'm in North America, so all I need to do is I'm going to do a ping to outlook.office365.
And we're testing here the DNS return that we get from looking up outlook.office365.com.
Correct, but there's a bit of information in that return that will tell me which data center I'm hitting. So if I hit that now, and you can see there, we've got North America Northwest, which is where I am at the moment.
Right.
Which is brilliant. I'm going to connect to the nearest data center, and my mailbox may well be in EMEA, but it means that it's pulled over our high-speed network from that data center in North America, and therefore the performance will be great.
Yep. For now, let's ignore the fact that the ping didn't work.
It doesn't matter, to be honest.
Oh,
it's that information there about the return. That's all I'm looking for.
Yes.
Correct, yeah. So let's shift around the world via my VPN connection. So I've turned off split tunneling here, so all the DNS call is going down the VPN link. So let's go to Australia.
So we're connecting to a VPN.
I can't do this from here because I've got no smart card in my machine at the minute.
Aha!
Let me see if I can put one in. It's because I've remoted to my machine.
All right. We've got a smart card there. Okay.
Let's see if it picks it up over RDP. No, that's not going to work. But luckily, like all good presentations, here's one I made earlier.
Okay, let's look at that.
So this is one I did earlier on. So we did that connecting to Sydney, and the return was APAC South. That's what I want.
It's given us a different IP address, and there's a reverse DNS for that IP address, which is different, showing us
correct.
We're at APAC South.
So because it thinks I'm in Sydney, because that's where my VPN endpoint was, we got returned the data center in APAC, which is the nearest one to me, which
right.
is brilliant. So I did another one in Reading in the UK, and there I'm told EMEA West. So you're essentially looking for this return information to be in the same zone as where your client is,
right.
is doing this call. If it's not, then you need to have a look at where your DNS calls are going out to the internet. So speak to your network team or whoever manages your DNS and make sure that those calls are being done locally. If they are being done locally, it's rare I see this, but there are occasions where we get this wrong. And you've done that test and you're doing the call in North America, but you're still getting an EMEA data center, then it may be something to do with where we think that IP address is, and we can fix that. But if you contact us, we can fix that. But it's very rare that that's the case. It's normally that the DNS call is going out of an incorrect location. So that's a very simple test you can run from your sites. Just make sure it's a local site, a local data center we're hitting, and that'll ensure that you've got the best connectivity to Office 365.
All right, so the next test that we're gonna take a look at is firewall or proxy or NAT port exhaustion. And so our ports are exhausted. What does that mean has happened?
So this is one that I run into occasionally, in that we have customers who have been using their existing infrastructure for years to connect to the internet. It works perfectly well. Internet connectivity is fine. They've got great bandwidth. But they start to run Office 365 services out of that point, that egress point. So we need to be careful of how many connections Office 365 is using. We need to be aware of that and make sure that the equipment in that egress point is capable of handling all those connections. So you might think that you open Outlook, you create one connection per user, but that's not the case. Especially with older versions of Outlook, we may use 6, 10, even more sometimes, TCP connections per user. So that's something we need to take into account. And then on top of that, you've got your SharePoint connectivity, i.e. you might use multiple TCP connections per browser window. And then you've got your general internet traffic that's still going out of that route. So we need to have a look. So if we look at the next slide, we need to just be aware of how many connections may be going out of a point. And let's take, for example, that we have a single proxy with a single IP, which is doing that NATing, the proxying out to Office 365. We recommend, based on the calculations on that link there, a maximum of 6,000 clients can be supported by a single public IP address. So that's because of the amount of connections that we may use for Outlook or SharePoint. What you might find when this becomes a problem is that you'll get intermittent connectivity. You might open SharePoint and it'll fail to connect, but then you refresh and it'll work. Or
it might work for some users and not for others.
Exactly that have existing connections, because we've run out of ports.
Yeah.
So in my experience, I'd err on the side of caution and say around 4,000 users per single IP. So there's an easy way we can fix this. So this normally needs to be done in the planning stages, but sometimes I think it's forgotten, or we think, you know, we've only got 4,000 users, we've got plenty of room on the proxy. So there's multiple ways we can fix this. So we could put in more proxies perhaps with another IP address, or we could just give an existing proxy another IP address and then load balance those with stickiness, so one client's using the same IP address. But obviously with that case, we have to be careful to make sure that the proxy can handle that load with all those users going through it. So it's just something we need to be aware of. And the symptoms you may see if this is a problem is intermittent connectivity. As you say, some users may work, some users may not. Outlook may hang when starting, when it's trying to connect. Or you might switch windows within Outlook and it has a little polo mint because it's trying to connect out and we can't get a port. So just have a look at how many IP addresses you have on your egress point for your users and try and work between 4,000 and 6,000 users per public IP address on that device.
I've been through proxy machines not having enough ports and running out, and I found a tip that you can use is if you have multiple proxy locations where you've got multiple internet egress points in your organization, if you manually set IE to point to a different one other than the one that's run out of ports, you can sometimes bypass the problem as a single user. Short-term thing, though.
Correct, yeah. I mean, we can move the load. If you've got other egress points that will be able to cope with that traffic, a short-term solution, you're right, would be to do that and shift some of that traffic. Maybe adjust a pack file for some users and shift them over to this other egress point. So, yeah, but as you say, it's a short-term solution. The longer-term solution is to make sure that the number of proxy servers and IP addresses on those proxies or NAT devices is scalable for the amount of users and use. The one thing I'll point out as well is the way, again, these things are designed, these egress points are designed traditionally for transient network traffic. So your users might go out to the internet to look at YouTube or Facebook or maybe do some work occasionally. But that kind of connectivity is transient. We open the connection, we do what we want to do and we close. So those things get used up and released very quickly. Outlook, for example, though, will open those six connections and it will sit there because we're constantly talking to the Exchange server out in Office 365 to pull data in. So those never get released. So that's the kind of thing we need to think about we're moving to a different way of working than we're used to with these devices. So we need to make sure they can scale to cope with that.
Right. All right. So let's take a look at the next of our tests. And this is going to be test number 5. It's all about packet loss. How do we identify if we've got packet loss? Packet loss certainly sounds like an obvious bad thing to happen, but tell us a little bit about this.
So if we're having poor performance and we've stepped through those things we've looked at already, our DNS calls are fine, our egress points are all nicely set up, perhaps we're losing some of that data that Office 365 is sending us.
And the diagram's a little misleading. Packet loss is unlikely to be no data. It's most likely to be some of your packets are missed, which may or may not impact users immediately.
And it can be quite hard to spot unless you know what you're looking at. So traditionally, if it's working nicely, then traffic should just come in and not be retransmitted. We expect a small level of retransmissions from networks. I mean, my general level is about 0.5%, maybe up to 1%, but you wouldn't expect any more than that. If we get higher levels than that, then there's something wrong on that network and we need to find out where it is. So the easy way to do this, so let's take that 14 meg file download example that we looked at before from Australia. If everything was working nicely there, I'd take a network trace, I'd start Netmon, open SharePoint, and I'd download that 14 meg file, which is exactly what I did on this demo. So I'm just going to switch in to a network trace where I did that on a network where we intentionally added some problems so we could see this behavior.
All right, so we're going to see some packet loss on this trace.
We are. So I've nicely filtered the trace here. So we've only got this one one particular trace, and this is where I downloaded a 14 meg PDF. So one of the first things I'll do is I'll perhaps on a colour rule. So Netmon has an ability to highlight certain things for you. So there's a particular filter which we'll use to find retransmits in a trace, which is automatically, you can find it in the load filter, standard filter, I'll zoom in there, standard filters, TCP, and then TCP retransmit. So we click on that, Netmon will nicely put in the filter there for us. So let's get rid of that so it's clear. That's my filter to look through a Netmon trace and find retransmits. So if I wanted to do a colour rule, which I've actually already done here, I can create a new one, use that filter, and set the background colour as red. So that should pop out at me once that's applied. If I scroll through, you can see those red packets. Those are the ones that are retransmitted. I can see really clearly straight away that we've got a fair few retransmits on here. But let's use the filter, and this will cause Netmon to look for retransmitted packets and highlight them for me. I'm not sure. That should have picked up loads of them. Maybe I've incorrectly put the filter in. Give me a second. I tell you what, I've copied the wrong bit there. When I removed it, you see the difference there? That's looking for SYN retransmit, so that's looking for when... Yeah. It's an important point, actually. That automatic filter actually puts this in as a separate filter.
So no SYN retransmit.
A SYN retransmit would indicate a port blocking issue, or maybe that proxy issue we saw before, where it can't open that socket, so it won't respond to my SYN.
Right.
So that's a good filter to be aware of, that Netmon, if you see a repeated SYN, it means we've got a port blocking issue
somewhere. But that's not happening in this trace.
That's not happening here. Unintentional demo there. So let's switch back to the original filter I was after. It's this one. Right. Property.tcp retransmit equals equals one. So now if I run this, we should see a lot of red in there.
There we go.
So I'll let that complete, but I've already got an idea there's a lot of retransmits in this trace. That's not good. That's going to cause real poor performance.
So this is, we're seeing a request for a retransmit, which tells us that what exactly does that tell us?
So these are actually packets that Netmon has seen more than once. So if I remove the filter, you'll see Netmon will indicate that it's requesting a fast retransmit. So in here, that is the client saying to Office 365, hey, you're missing a bit of data here, or we've missing a bit of data, it's gone astray. So can you retransmit this bit? There's various mechanisms in there to tell the other end what bit of data we're missing. But what we're looking at here is the amount of retransmitted frames. So this is where Netmon has flagged these frames have been retransmitted. So what I'm interested in here is actually the number that are displayed. So here I've got 1,747,
yep.
If you see down here at the bottom. So if we use that number, and just remove this, and because I've filtered out this TCP session from end to end, there's nothing else in this traffic, I've got 37,600. So we can do the maths on that and work out what percentage of retransmission that is. That's over 1% for sure. So that's what I'm looking for. If I've got
around about 5%, I think.
Yeah, if I've got over 1%, then I need to start looking at where those packets are being retransmitted. So let's example, this was a client-side trace. I would perhaps ask my network team to take a trace on the proxy itself, on the edge of it, and I could see if that retransmit perhaps got lost in my network. If it arrived at the proxy and it never arrived at the client, that takes a bit of skill with analyzing network traces, but your network team should, in theory, be able to do that. But a high level of retransmission would be a good indicator that you've got a lossy network somewhere, and that needs investigating and finding. And once we've fixed that, then your performance should improve quite a bit.
All right. So our next test that we're going to look at is about routing and internet peering. So let's take a look at what we can test for on our network routing.
Yep. So there are a couple of tools we can use to do this. In the UK, we call this routing rather than routing, so you'll have to excuse me if I...
Did you say it, trace routing?
A trace route, yes.
Oh, okay. Trace route here.
So it's quite hard for me to switch between the two, but I'll try. So the first test we asked people to run, just to get an idea of what network devices were going over to get to Office 365, is trace route. So in the example on this slide here, we've done trace route -4, which means use IPv4 rather than IPv6. And to outlook.office365.com. And if you have a look at that slide there, we get a bit of information about what all those names on the right-hand side are basically routing points or routing points that we're going over. And what we're looking for is how quickly you're getting onto the Microsoft network. So this was a trace taken internally here. So we can see we're on our internal network, and then the bit you're interested in is the .msn.net. So that would indicate that you've hit the Microsoft public network, and there's an indicator there which data center you've hit by one of the codes there. So we can have a look at that and tell which data center you've hit and follow that through. So I can see from here we've gone over the Microsoft network through the US data centers and out to Dublin, which is one of our data centers in EMEA. So that's useful information, and we can see if maybe that connectivity isn't what we're expecting. You're going via some strange route for some reason, and we can then investigate that. So it's an easy test to do. I can just switch back to my demo, and I'm not going to run one of these traces because they can take a little while to run. But here's a trace route I took from my hotel room earlier on. And it gives me information about the customers, the hotel's network, the ISP, and then how quickly we've hit the Microsoft network. And here's that msn.net that we're interested in. And I can see we're hitting the North America data centers from here fairly quickly. So that's all good.
So something to do if you are spending a lot of time on the public internet before your traceroute is getting to that Microsoft network is maybe find out more about where Microsoft has network endpoints, and look at how your ISP can get there more quickly or have better routing into that. And we have lots of information about peering with Microsoft's network at...
PeeringDB.
PeeringDB is the public site, peeringdb.com. And there's also microsoft.com/peering, where Microsoft publishes information for ISPs and network operators to learn about peering.
Yeah, so that gives you yourself and as a view of how quickly you're hitting our network. We want you to do that as quickly as possible. So peering is a good way of making sure that that hop from when you leave your managed network to getting on the Microsoft network is as short and as quick as possible. So a trace route or a trace TCP, which is what I'll show you in a second, is a good way of seeing how that last mile is working. And also if there's any unintentional routes that we're taking. So for example, if you had that DNS problem earlier, we'd be able to see that in that trace route that we'd see you were hitting the wrong data centers than what we'd expect for where you are.
Did you want to look at trace TCP now?
Yeah, so if we switch to my demo, so, trace TCP is the tool we're running here. It's already open. All I'm going to do is put Outlook. Oops, I can't spell. Office365.com. And here's the difference between this and trace route is that I'm going to say I want you to do this over port 443.
All right.
Trace route doesn't do it over the TCP port they're going to use. So this is the equivalent to PS ping doing what it does to to a normal ping. That's going to take a while. But if I switch back to my other machine, that's all we need to do. There's not much to the syntax there. And here's some I took early. from the hotel. So you see that looks pretty much similar to what I saw from the trace route I took earlier, but in some
trace TCP.
It is, but in some instances, especially on customers' network where that trace route doesn't work, trace TCP will give us a lot more information. So by all means, run trace route first, and if that doesn't give you what you want to look at, you know, it's saying it can't find what the name is, try and run trace TCP. And then see if it gives you a bit more information about that routing. Okay.
All right. So we're going to talk about item number 7. Test 7 is about TCP idle time settings.
Okay. So the next thing we're going to look at is pretty important, and it's very common I run across this being a problem. And this is around TCP idle time settings on customers' egress points. So what we're talking about here is the networking equipment clearing up TCP connections when it doesn't see any network traffic on it. So if you, like I said before, the egress points are generally designed for that transient web traffic, the browsing that we ask for a page, we get it, we close the connection. So these things are set up, proxies, firewalls, NAT devices, to clear up any sessions where it doesn't see any TCP traffic for a period of time. And generally I find this is around 1 to 2 minutes. So it'll be monitoring that TCP session, I've seen nothing on it for 2 minutes, kill it. The problem is with Outlook, we open a connection, as I said earlier, and we leave that open, and sometimes it will be quiet for a few minutes. And what we find is with customers that haven't changed these idle time settings for Office 365 traffic, that Outlook will perhaps, we normally get this when a user goes away for lunch, for example, and therefore it's quiet, we're not doing any traffic. The proxy, for example, will remove that connection but not tell Outlook. And then what happens is Outlook will try and reconnect when you come back or in the middle of your lunch, and it'll have a little polo mint because that session's no longer available. And we have to retransmit the TCP packet, realize that session's dead, and then reconnect. And that can take up to about 40 seconds. So this is a key thing to check for customers with their egress points. So talk to your networking team about the proxies, your firewalls, your NAT devices on that egress point. What is your idle time setting? If it is around 2 to 3 minutes, that's too low for Office 365 traffic. And we can fix this by one of two ways. One, you can allow Office 365 traffic to be idle for a longer period of time, but quite often that's not possible. The other option is a ping packet. We can set a keep alive packet on the Windows client. So every 30 seconds, we'll send a little packet. The proxy will see that and it won't kill the session. So there's more detail on that on my blog, which is linked on that slide there. So how to step through troubleshooting and fixing that issue.
Yeah, we should have a resource on the page also with a link to that blog. Hey, so test number 8 we're going to talk about now, proxy authentication.
So this is another easy one to check and another very common one. So by proxy authentication, we mean that when your users try and create a connection out to the internet, we just authenticate to make sure they are someone that you're aware of. So they're actually one of your users. So we provide information to the proxy, much like a logon, and we'll check with the DC that that user is authorized on the network before we allow them out onto the internet.
And what we're looking at here is traces out of Netmon with the packets?
Correct, yes. So it's a simple one to fix. Again, start Netmon, connect, and in the you'll see the three-way handshake, and the first HTTP request you see will be a HTTP request. You'll get a response saying proxy authentication required. So if you look at the slide there, it's blatantly clear that that's occurring, and that means you've got proxy authentication on. Normally this can be okay, but the problem is it can sometimes get very busy on a proxy, and that authentication might take 4 seconds, which is going to take, you know, if you switch calendars, we fire up a new TCP connection, you might get the little polo mint. Well, we're trying to connect, we're doing this authentication. So the Microsoft recommendation is you bypass proxy authentication for Office 365 traffic. So if we look at the next slide, we've got a list of URLs that we suggest you whitelist on the proxy. So if the user asks for any of these addresses, you don't authenticate them. And then we remove that problem. And
so we just took 4 seconds out of the time taken to connect.
It might sound like a little thing, but to a user switching calendars or opening a new mailbox or opening a SharePoint page, that 4 seconds can be a long time. So we want to cut any chance of delay. And it's also extra work on your proxy and domain controllers to do that authentication. So the amount of connectivity we've got for Office 365, you want to cut anything out that's going to cause any problems, and this is a big one. So easy to test for, a NetMon trace, just look for that proxy authentication required response in the NetMon frame, and if you see it, then talk to your proxy team about bypassing authentication for Office 365 traffic.
All right, let's take a look at test number 9. So test number 9 is about looking at the performance of DNS. So DNS, of course, is looking up the IP address from a name that we have. And is that not always fast?
No. Again, it's another common one I run into. And again, it might be 3 seconds. You can see the example here, it's 3.7 seconds. You might think, well, that's not that long. But this should complete in milliseconds. And let's, for example, you've got that proxy authentication problem, it took 4 seconds, and your DNS call takes 3 seconds. We're already into 7 seconds delay, so when you launch Outlook, before you've done anything. So it's an easy one to check for. Take a trace, do an ipconfig flush DNS in a command window to get rid of any caching of IP addresses, and then connect to Outlook, your SharePoint site or whatever. And then simply in NetMon, write the filter DNS in the filter box that we saw before, and that will show you all the DNS calls. And we then look at the time delta column to show, that's what I've shown here. So we see the DNS call for this Contoso site, and the response took 3.78 seconds. So that's too long.
Yeah.
You know, that should come back in milliseconds. So
DNS, you said before about flushing the cache, DNS is cached on the client, but it's also cached on servers all around the world. And you should not be connecting like across the other side of the world to get this. It should be very, very fast.
So this would need, correct. This would need more investigation to find out if that was getting to the DNS server that took too long, or whether the DNS server was perhaps taking too long to reply to you. But again, something that needs further investigation with your networks and DNS server management team. But it's all about picking away these little problems and making sure everything's working nicely for the best Office 365 experience.
And this is another one which looks like it's really easy to check with a NetMon trace, just looking at the right packets.
Exactly. Start the trace, flush your DNS cache, connect to your resource, and then just use the DNS filter in NetMon, and that will show you quite quickly your DNS calls. Match them up to the call and the response. If you look on the slide here, you'll notice we've got a DNS query ID, so that's 0xE41. If you can see that, it's right on the start of the frame. And then the response has that same query ID. So that's a way of matching it up. There are other ways within NetMon. NetMon gives it an ID as well, but just match those two up. That's your call and response, and you want to see the time delta between those two.
Right. Okay, so the next item we're talking about, this is test number 10, which is mysteriously called other TCP values. And actually they do have other titles, SAC and TCP MSS.
Yep.
These are not ones I'm familiar with, Paul.
So they are other TCP values that we may well normally ignore. So it's just, again, a very quick test to make sure we're working optimally here. So it's about getting all your ducks in a row and checking everything is optimal. My DNS calls are quick. We're not doing proxy authentication slowly. And once all these things are working nicely, we will get the best experience. So
we actually talked about this in an earlier module, how Office 365 has servers in our data centers and it's got clients. And there's all these different things in between the server and the client that you've got to look at to get that optimal performance.
Correct, yeah. So these things, again, we need a network trace to see this. And so I would take a network trace, start NetMon, open Outlook or open SharePoint. And this information is in the three-way handshake. So there's two things we're going to look at here. One is the max segment size. So this shows you the data payload of each packet. So for a normal Ethernet network, that maximum will be 1460 bytes. So you don't want to see anything much less than that. You might see it down a little bit. Perhaps you've got a link that can only carry data payloads of about 1400 bytes because of some encryption overhead or something like that. That's fine. But if you see this way down at 900 or 500 bytes or something, basically every TCP packet can only carry a very small amount of data, and then obviously your download speed is going to be a lot less. So it's worth a quick check. The second thing is SAC. It's called selective acknowledgement. So that's TCP's mechanism of informing the server. So we saw those retransmits before. SAC is a way of informing the server, hey, I'm missing this particular chunk of data, and also this chunk of data. If it didn't have SAC, essentially what you would have to do is drop every packet that came into that client from the point we've lost the packet. But with SAC, we can say, hey, we missed this first chunk, but we've got all this bit down to here. Can you just resend me this bit? So it's a way of efficiently just retransmitting the bit that we've lost. So it's a very quick test to see. So if I switch to my demo machine.
Let's take a look. Did not need that smart card again.
Not on this one. That was my VPN connection. So any three-way handshake, we can see this. So let's take this one here. So I click on the SIM packet. And then on the bottom, on the frame details, this is where I see this information.
All right, that's the TCP flag section.
So you can see the flag is set to SYN, but it's actually down at the bottom, TCP options. So here is my maximum segment size. So that's great. I've got 1460 bytes, which is the maximum I expect here. This is where it actually holds that scale factor information we were talking about before. And SAC is enabled on this machine. Brilliant. But I also need to check that on the SYNAC, because we use the lower of the two values based on if the other end says, hey, I only use 1300 byte frames, then that's what we have to use. So let's just look at the SYNAC on the packet coming back. And excellent, we've got 1460 bytes here on the inbound. So as I say, a little drop on that to 1350 or somewhere around that is fine. That's kind of can be expected on some network segments, but just look for a very low number on that, and that will be a problem. And again, SAC is permitted here, so that's brilliant. That's a very quick check to do, but again, something that can cause performance issues if it's not right.
Wow. Okay. So we're up to test number 11, test number 11, it's one that's not on your blog, Paul, that on your top 10.
Yep.
We've added this in just to talk a little bit about link troubleshooting and some of the tools that we have for doing that. In an earlier module, we talked about planning for capacity for link, and this is a troubleshooting tool for looking at link connectivity. This tool actually has a different URL depending on whereabouts you're located and what link servers you're expecting to use. And the URLs for those are shown on the slide. It does download a Java ActiveX control, and you'll need to go into the Java control panel applet in your Windows operating system, which is part of the Java install, and allow these URLs to be accessed by the Java security tab there. So there's an extra step that you'll have to do there. Once you do that and you run this tool, it does provide a lot of detailed results about connectivity to link online. So that's something that's well worthwhile taking a look. Lots of detailed output there. We won't actually demo it today.
Yeah, it's quite a lengthy test, isn't it? So something you need to sit down and run through.
So the last test that we have, this is test number 12, is looking for SharePoint customizations. SharePoint customizations means something that you've done to design the pages in SharePoint. There are a lot of things, of course, that you can do to edit content on a SharePoint page. If you're using the SharePoint out-of-the-box page, such as the OneDrive for Business homepage that has not been customized, does not have any master pages, has no themes, has no customizations of any kind, then that's the baseline of performance that you should be looking at. With customizations, they can impact the performance of loading those pages. And it is pretty easy to degrade the performance of that page load. The baseline here is to look at that baseline, look at that OneDrive for Business homepage and how long that takes to load, and then compare the pages that perhaps you're hearing concerns about from the users. And if there is a difference, if there's some customizations, start looking at those and use that as your starting point. We have another video that you can watch. This is from the SharePoint conference, Talk SBC 3993, that was earlier in 2014, that you can take a look at, which goes into a lot of detail about different things that can be done to improve the customization of pages designed for SharePoint Online. Paul, you do a little bit of this troubleshooting. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the things you do in this area?
Yeah, so this is kind of stepping out of the network layer troubleshooting, more looking at the application layer, but it can still, you know, as a problem, a SharePoint performance issue, when we step through the network problems, we'll move up to the application layer. And this might give me a bit of information to look, go back and look at my network traces from the slow page load, but we can actually look within Internet Explorer or Firefox as to what in that page took so long to load. Was it the stage of the SSL session setup? There's a lot of information we can gain from an application layer. So switching to my demo machine, we've installed the tool HTTP Watch, which is a plugin to the browser here, and that's set to record from here. And what I'm going to do is log into that OneDrive for Business page that you mentioned before. And because this is recording, it's going to capture every TCP session, all the information about every one of those connections.
Just the ones that go into Internet Explorer, right?
Yes, this is plugged into Internet Explorer. So whatever I do within this IE window will be captured here.
Right.
So you can see there, there's my sign in. And bear in mind, this is HTTPS traffic, but I can actually see what the call is, because it's sat in the browser. It's after we've decrypted this traffic and before we've encrypted it on the way out. But you can see there, I did a post to log in. And because this is the free version, it's a little limited on what it shows me. It doesn't show me a time chart or that sort of thing, but I could still get an idea. It took 0.3 seconds there, so okay. And let's make this a bit bigger. And here you can see, there's my OneDrive for Business page that we've just logged into. Each of these chunks tells me it's a different stage in the page load process, but this will be the render start of the page and my page load time. So this is when it's fired page load into Internet Explorer, and we can see the data. So I can see here, if I scroll down to the bottom, how long it took till we hit that page load time. If I hover over the right bit. So the free version hides some of this stuff, so this is why you need a paid version.
Right.
But we get an idea. If there's perhaps an element of a page that's slow, so you can see here, this bit here, I don't know what it was, but it's some redirect page.
So that bar is very wide.
Yeah, exactly. So this would be an indicator to me that this element is perhaps taking a bit longer than it should. But the point is, because this is a free tool, some of the things aren't available. But now I've got an idea, perhaps that bit of my page isn't right. I can go into SharePoint and have a look at it. Or I can maybe use one of the other tools like Fiddler or the IE windows to concentrate on that particular area and get a bit more detail about what it is that's gone wrong in there. But as I say, if you've got the full version, you can load this in. It will give you more information about the times and things like that. But it's also given us the HTTP results, the amount of bytes sent and received. But it just allows you to hone in on what elements of the page is taking too long. So again, here we've done a post of some upload, and that took a little bit of time. But if something was really bad, then we'd be able to see quite easily.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of Module 10. And we've walked through 12 different tests that you can do to look at performance issues that you might see with connecting to Office 365. Paul, I want to thank you for coming along and sharing some of that experience with us.
Great to be of help.
And talking about some of these different things. There are a lot of them, and it is a lot of work going in and troubleshooting these. It's always best to do it, of course, from the client side, where the customer is, rather than you know,
yeah,
not doing that at all.
Of course, and I realise we've flown through some of those quite quickly, but I've written the blog post in more detail than I can imagine to do exactly that, and you can walk through. I've described how to do the tests and what you're looking for and how to remedy it. So hopefully that'll be more help on top of watching this video.
Yeah, well recommended. So we have module 11 coming up, which is about actually drilling into that last test that we're doing, troubleshooting SharePoint Online page design customizations. So I hope you'll join me back for that. Thanks very much.
Thanks.